ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I was able to interview Daniel Dobson. And this is a two-part episode. I've broken it up into about two 30-minute episodes purposely. Daniel Dobson starts off with his time playing soccer, moving through his career and playing soccer in the area, who he played with, his fame, he says, moving on to his college career at University of Memphis, and his days playing in the MLS. As we listen to it, listen to some of the things he shared about those days in the MLS and, more importantly, in college. Now, as we listen to this, I hope you enjoy this week as much as I did editing, reviewing it, because a lot of things really struck with me that, as a parent, we need to focus on. As someone that's an enthusiast for soccer, makes perfect sense. Now, let's head to the pitch.
Well, my name's Daniel Dobson. I've been in the coaching world for about almost 20 years now. My current role is an athletic director at Founders Classical Academy of Corinth. I've been there the last 3 years. And previously, I was at the University of North Texas as the assistant coach and recruiting coordinator for the Division I program up there. In my 8 years there, our highest ranking was a number 24 national ranking, so we cracked the top 25. And we won 10 conference championships in my 8 years there. So we were very successful and It was a lot of fun, and our main niche was recruiting the Texas kids, specifically the DFW area. So there's tons of talent in this area. Currently, I work with DKSC as their college advisory program director. So I get a chance to still stay in the college game and help these student athletes kind of navigate through their college recruiting process, practice phone calls with them. So they're used to talking to coaches on the phone, getting them used to email coaches and post their highlights on social media, and just give them the ins and outs of the college recruiting process, specifically what college coaches look for. I was born and raised in the Dallas area, born in Dallas, grew up in Garland, played soccer in the Classic League growing up. I was on Genesis 83, my first club with Diego Castro, then moved to Longhorns. My claim to fame on Longhorns was I got to play with Clinton Dempsey for a couple years. And I always tell people it's so cool to see kids at 10, 11, 12 years old because you never know what they can become. And just being on the same team as Clint at those ages and then seeing him now as one of the best U.S. national team players in history, it's just kind of cool to see and just tell these kids, hey, you never know, dream big. And one of these kids, if not multiple of these kids, will be the next Clint Dempsey and make it big time. But I bounced around clubs here and there. And then I was able to get a scholarship at the University of Memphis and played 4 years there. My first 2 years kind of struggled, learning how the process works and working hard and all that stuff. My last 2 years, I figured it out and was able to be team captain my senior year. And that year, we were picked to finish 9th out of 10 teams in our conference. In my senior year, we actually won the conference regular season and won the conference tournament. And we were ranked as high as number 10 in the nation that year. And that was a main reason I was able to play in the MLS. I was the first player from the University of Memphis to sign an MLS contract. I signed with the Kansas City Wizards back in 2005. So with all that being said, I love soccer. I've been doing soccer for a long time, and I'm just blessed and fortunate to be able to give back and use my experience to kind of help the next generation along with their journey.
But how long have you been playing soccer for?
So I grew up playing as I was a little boy, probably 3 or 4 years old. I have an older brother, so kind of followed his footsteps. My dad coached us early on growing up. Not much of a soccer background, but awesome coach and awesome father figure, just being there for his kids and just helping us grow. And it was fun. We just loved the game. We were fortunate enough to grow up in a house that backed up to a elementary school. Huge park, so we were always out there playing different sports, soccer, football, basketball, baseball. But just for whatever reason, soccer just was a fun sport and really took it on as a young age and never really stopped.
And you said you bounced around. So you played 3-4 years. I'm assuming you started off in rec, or did you jump into club early on? I honestly am not from the world of club soccer, so I really don't know.
Back in my day, we didn't have this academy stuff where they start so young. So it was rec soccer until 10 years old. And then so it was basically played in the Garland Soccer Association, played rec. It was awesome. It was all the local kids together playing. And then once you get to the 10 years old age, the top ones from the rec teams go select. And I started with Genesis, played there for a couple of years. And then you know how crazy the club world was. As a kid, you don't know what's going on. But now, being in the club world for 15-plus years as a coach, you see how crazy it is. Political, parents, coaches. There's so many unknowns. But that Genesis team just kind of folded. So I was lucky enough to get on a team with Longhorns, played with them for a couple seasons. And then I was never a starter on the Longhorns. I was always the first one off the bench, second one off the bench. And I got my heart crushed because tryouts came. And 2 or 3 days into tryouts, I didn't get a contract. And some kid that showed up late was faster than me, had a lot of speed. He took my spot. So I was kind of left out and had to go scramble and find another team. But it was a blessing because I landed on Comets with Horst Bertels. Great German coach, learned a lot from him. And then my last couple of years, we had our high school team, a bunch of local high school kids decided to play our own little team. We had a good coach with Ed Snyder and just – basically had our high school club team play in the Classic League and do really well. So it was a fun journey in the club world.
And then you went on to University of Memphis. And as I know that you said in previous podcasts that your first few years was a struggle, or first year or second year was a struggle for you and almost gave up soccer, correct?
Yes, sir. So I was able to go to the University of Memphis. It's funny how I ended up there. They saw me at one of the showcase tournaments, the Texas Lightning showcase tournament. They've been around a while, but that's where they saw me play. And then I got invited to an ID camp. Actually, Rhodes College in Memphis, a Division III school, was also recruiting me. So I went to an ID camp there. And that's where the Memphis coach kind of really saw more of me. He said I was the best player at the camp, and he wanted to bring me on. So I was very humbled and very fortunate. Always a dream to play Division I soccer, and that was the only D1 school that gave me a chance. My first 2 years there, I definitely struggled. I was always an athletic kid, but I was always looking for the easy way out. I hated to run. I hated fitness. We had the Cooper test. It's 2 miles under 12 minutes, or you didn't play. And my freshman year, I made it in, I think, 14 and a half, so it was ridiculous. The next time we ran it, it was a little loop around this little mile loop. I made the first lap in like 7-something. It was embarrassing. So the second lap, I actually tried to cut and cheat, and I got caught doing it, and it was not fun. It was very embarrassing. So it took me a while to realize, hey, the only way to do it is to do it. You just got to work hard, and you got to do it when no one's looking. So in the off season, I'd finally just get up and run a couple miles, and then just try to beat the next time and try to beat it again. And it took about 7 to 8 times of just doing that on my own to finally get that time down where it needed to be. And by my junior year, I got the Cooper time down to 11:56. And then my senior year, I got it down to 11:26. So once I added the mentality of working hard and just knowing how to push yourselves and your body can do things that you don't think they can do, and added that with my athletic ability, I was a pretty dominant center midfielder my last 2 years.
So did you always play center mid, or did you bounce around when you were younger before you went to college?
When I was younger, I usually played center mid or forward. The funny thing was, when I got to the MLS, they played me at left defender. So that was kind of a shock. I was more, my comfort zone's in the middle, but then playing outside back at the highest level, guarding the highest level players. One of our players was Josh Wolf. He played on the U.S. National World Cup team that year, and I would have to cover him in practice every day. So that was a very humbling experience.
I can only imagine the people you played against. So I know I went to your college. So a little bit more about your playing years growing up, getting before college. So did you said you played in high school. You said you played for, what club was it that you played for from probably like ninth grade to your senior year then?
So ninth grade to your senior year. It was probably Comets for that ninth grade year. And then sophomore, junior, and senior year is a small club called Legacy. And it was just formed about 8 kids from our high school team. We had a pretty good high school team. And then a couple, probably like 6 or so kids from Creekview. So we just kind of teamed up together, and just, it was more or less for fun. And we just happened to be pretty good as well. So it was one of those things where it wasn't much pressure. We weren't the big name club, but we could compete with those big name clubs.
That's very impressive, coming from seeing how the world of club soccer is here in DFW, coming from a small little, even at that time frame, how competitive soccer is here.
Yeah, it is competitive, as you know. It's getting more and more competitive, and these kids are getting better and better and better. It amazes me just watching some of these games, especially younger ones, all the skill moves they can do and just the ability of these kids. I credit it to a lot of the great coaching that goes on here, but also these kids work hard and they're in it. They love soccer.
It is growing to be a stronger sport here in the States, thankfully. Mm-hmm. Going back to your college, so you played left back in your pro days, but center mid. And what you said the change was doing that, the testing for the 2 miles, and it really motivated you to move forward more. Was there anything else that your coaches helped you with, or in the collegiate world, or is there a process that you went through in college to help you gain that ability to have that desire, that burning, other than being embarrassed running in a 14 and a half, 2 minute mile?
There were two big key factors for sure. My junior year, we got a former Scottish Marine as our fitness coach. His name is Robbie Nicholson. And he changed my world just with his work rate. I mean, he had an 8-pack, maybe even a 10-pack abs at 35 years old. And he would actually do the fitness work with us. So you couldn't say, oh, it's impossible, because you got a 35-year-old man doing it. So if you're an 18 to 22-year-old Division I athlete, you should be able to do it. So that was one thing that really helped me out, just having a coach do it with us and show us the way. Another really big key moment for me was I was able to get an internship with the Memphis Grizzlies of the NBA in basketball. I was their public relations intern, so I got to go to the games, all the home games, help set up for the media, and I would have to be there like 3 hours before game time just to set up, make sure everything's good. And one of these games, I would see like Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal like just get done. Or actually, it was more Kobe, but you just get done with a workout, a hard workout before games. And it's like, wait a minute, this guy is about to play in 3 hours. What's he doing working out? And they're like, man, this guy just works his butt off. And he's like, just like Jordan, they would go work out hard before games. And then they'd go play a game and just dominate. And it just really struck a bell to me. It's like, man, so that's what you got to do to get to the next level. You just got to outwork people. So my junior year, when I learned that, I just went to the gym. I would go to school from about 8 to 11:30, and I'd go to the gym and work out hard, get a quick little lunch break, and then we would practice from like about 2 to 4. So then I would go to practice and just work out hard. So I would put in a good workout session on my own before my actual team practice, and then I'd go to my team practice and really just give it all out there, nothing to lose, and just work as hard as I possibly could. And then after that practice, kind of go eat some dinner a little bit. And then I would go play pickup basketball to work on my fitness, because basketball is really my true love. I love basketball, and that's where I got my cardio in. So I would be putting in three workouts a day, when most kids, and myself included, my first couple of years, would just put in one workout at the team practice and think you're doing something. But between those two lessons, that really kind of helped motivate me and push me to the next level. And I totally credit that to being able to add MLS to my resume.
Going back to what you're talking about Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, I think one of the best things I've ever heard come from Michael Jordan was, as an athlete, you need to train so the games are easy. So when you actually do get in those game scenarios, is that the games are easy. Practice should be 10 times harder than any game you play in. And I've tried to apply that to my now 9-year-old, and it doesn't work out so well yet, but I'm hoping that lesson will apply. And hearing that come from you, learning that at the college level, is great to hear, because it applies, it shows where you can be and where you can go.
I mean, that's the secret. And the sooner you can learn that, I mean, everyone will be surprised what they can accomplish, because you just have to outwork people. And if you truly want something, you're passionate about it, just put in those hours. I mean, Kobe Bryant, he would work out like at 3 a.m. and then go eat breakfast, come back and do it again at breakfast time. And he would put like 5 sessions in. And then he would say by year 3 or 4, these other NBA players couldn't catch me because there's not enough time for them to catch up. I've already put in the work. So there's a reason why he's one of the best in the NBA, or he was at his time.
Yes, it's amazing. And you hear, I mean, Ronaldo, it's like, I remember talking to my son, him and I were talking about whatever team he was on at the time, they just won the championship league. And his teammate says, do you know where Ronaldo is the next day, 5 a.m. in the morning? He's back at the gym getting ready for whatever's next. He's not out celebrating until 2 a.m.
That's right. And here's another example. Coach Pedro, he has his Allegiance Academy School of Excellence, and he's also one of the DKSC 07 boys coaches who just won the national championship in the ECNL. At their academy, they're training 4 hours minimum a day, high-level training for soccer players that are really wanting to take that next level. And it proves and it shows, like, hey, this is the secret. Just go out there and do the hours of hard work. And his team was national champions this year, but they're putting in minimum of 4 hours of hardcore work every day. And I tell my kid, he's about to be 9 as well. It's like, hey, I get it. You want to play soccer, but if you really want to compete, this is what these kids are doing. So I'm here for you. I'm not going to push you. If you want to do it, we'll do it. But just so you know, like, this is a level that you got to do it and commit to if you do want that. And maybe not so much right now, but I promise you there are kids doing that much work at this age.
Yes. And I don't remember where I heard it. Somewhere in Brazil, they were talking about kids starting, I don't remember, 8 or 9 years old. They get about 10,000 touches a day. I'm like, how do you get 10,000 touches a day? Then I realized they're playing soccer for 6 hours.
Yeah. It's scary, but that's why Brazil is what they are.
Yes. As you progressed, you went from college to the MLS. So how was your experience with the MLS? How was the transition from college to the pros for you?
Yeah, to me, it was quite the transition. It was like a kid at the candy store is a dream come true. It took me a while to realize, like, man, I made it. Like, I'm here. I'm in the locker room with these guys. I'm training with these guys. So it was truly a dream come true. I honestly wish I would have taken advantage of my opportunity more than I did. It was tough being like the team captain on a team number 10 in the nation, and then going to the MLS, you're on the bottom of the totem pole, not getting any game time, just struggling to just find your role and everything. So it was just mentally, it was a tough transition, just being one of the best in your team to now you're number 27 or 28 on your team. Kansas City, the year before I got there, just lost in the MLS finals the year before. So they were stacked, and the player playing in front of me, Jose Berciaga Jr., the year I was there, I was his backup. He was named best 11 on the MLS that year. So playing time was not much at all, and it was just grinding at practice. And it was like, for what? I'm never going to get to play. But looking back, I wish I would have stuck with it and just developed and learned. And I was a 21-year-old professional soccer player, so off the field stuff, I could have made better decisions and took care of my body more, but it was just one of those deals. It was a dream come true, but I wish I would have taken advantage of it more and just realized, hey, you might not play for a couple years, but put in the work, and then year two, three, or four, that's when your time comes. So I was immature to realize that at that age.
Now, I'm only comparing from what I've read and understand. So normally the younger players don't start right out of the gate. I mean, you normally have your 22 to 24-year-olds. Actually, I'll probably say closer to 24-year-olds that are normally the starters in the MLS here in the States, even today. Is that, was the trend then, and do you still see that as a trend now? Do you still keep up with that?
It was a trend, but my rookie year and Scott Seeley's rookie year were the same time. And Scott Seeley, you know what he's doing in Frisco now. He's killing it with his facility and his programs. He does a good job. He was one of those freshmen that comes in, and he was a rookie that came in and he got some good minutes. If he wasn't starting, he was coming on the field every time, and he did real well. So it's kind of rare for the rookies to come in and make an immediate impact. But then again, there are some that come in and do well, and it's all based on the teams and what holes they need to fill and who they have coming back. So it's not unheard of. Now with these developmental teams like FC Dallas, their academy, they're bringing kids up through their system. So you will see some younger kids come up and get some minutes. So I think it's more common now than it was back when I played.
Yeah. I just find it very interesting. So you went from playing center mid to left back. So I have to ask this because curiosity. Are you left-footed then?
I am left-footed. They love my left foot. I could hit a ball 50, 60 yards on a dime. I could switch it. I had pretty good left foot, and they liked my size. So they were seeing if they can convert me. I did have a little experience my freshman year. Coach threw me at left back just to see what I could do, our first preseason game in Ireland. And so I kind of got a game or two under my belt at that, but it's just a different position, different everything really than center mid. But that's why I tell kids, like, when I'm coaching, I'm like, hey, I'm going to give you experience playing this position, this position, this position. You're going to learn something different, and you never know. You might get thrown in there, and a coach might need you to play that position. So you're going to learn it at a young age to develop and really just feel comfortable with it. So if you're a forward, you might play defense. So that'll just teach you some little tricks, like, oh, when I'm defending this forward, I can use that next time when I am a forward. So you just want to make yourself valuable, and you don't want to just be like, hey, I can only play this position, because no matter what level, a coach might need to put you at a different position. So you want to learn it and get exposed to it as young as possible, in my opinion.
I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I've heard that from day one, is that you don't want to be pigeonholed at a young age in a position. I mean, there's some great kids that play certain positions phenomenal, but they do need more exposure to other spots.
And in my 8 years as a college coach, we would turn so many kids in from forwards for whatever reason to outside backs, so attacking outside backs. So you have an athletic mindset attacking player, and you plug them into that outside back role, and it would destroy teams, because who picks up that outside back when they're going up the field attacking? Not a lot of teams do, and that's when holes create. And it's not uncommon to be recruited to a position and get placed somewhere else.
That's amazing. I mean, that's interesting to me. So now you played in the MLS for a season or two, or how long?
Yeah, I was in there for the whole 2005 season, and then my end of the year meeting, they wanted me to go down to the A League, and that's a league right below the MLS, First Division A League, and my agent had me a contract set up with Charleston Battery, but 2 days before I was supposed to make that 20-plus drive to the East Coast, I kind of just told him, hey, my heart's not in it. I want to stay in Dallas and start the real world, because in my mind, I'd already made it to the top. I didn't want to come down and work my way up again, and really, I saw the NBA lifestyle and I saw the MLS lifestyle, and it was night and day different. So I was like, you know what? I reached my childhood dream. I got my jersey. I got my picture with the team picture and everything. And I just kind of want to start in the real world. I was lucky to play with Preki. He was a 2-time MLS MVP. And in 2008, he was a Chivas USA coach. And he signed me to a 10-day contract when they played a game here at FC Dallas. So it was a way for me just to kind of play a game. I didn't get on the first team game, but I got to play with the reserves. And it was good for me just in 2008 to see if I could still had it, if I could still make it. It was good just to give me comfort knowing, hey, I could still play at that level. It's good experience. But only played 1 year in 2005 and just one game in 2008.
So you went from the MLS. Did you go straight to working for UNT, or did you have other career options until you got into that position?
I had my first real job was a 7-to-5 desk job booking loads for a company called CH Robertson, and that lasted a couple weeks because that told me I did not want this lifestyle. I did not want to do that the rest of my life. So from there I got into the coaching world with Carl Bussey with Mustangs. He had a little club in Highland Park area. Mm-hmm. So I coached with him for a couple years, and that's what really got my foot in the door. It was really cool. We had Emmett Smith's daughter on our team. We had Daryl Johnson's kids on our team. So it was cool just coaching some high-level athletes that I grew up watching. And I mean, we watched Super Bowl days all day long in the 90s. So just some of my childhood sports heroes getting a chance to coach their daughters and sons really gave me the love of just coaching and realizing, hey, I can make a career at this. So I was able to coach in the club world, and that's kind of where I got started. Was coaching club since really 2006 when I was deciding if I wanted to keep on playing or keep on coaching. And when Carl gave me that opportunity to coach, it was like, man, this is cool. I can still get the love of the game and I can make a living doing it. I was making more coaching than I was in the MLS.
That's crazy to think. So you went from coaching with the Mustangs and eventually you ended up at UNT 8 years. So that would be about 2012.
So I was there, 2012 to 2019. So I was with Mustangs for a couple of years, and then I really started my own little club in the Highland Park area. My best friend and I, Matt Montaigne, he's a goalie coach. He's the one that got me the job at UNT, but we grew up next door to each other, so we've known each other 40 years now in April, our whole life. So we started coaching together, and we had about 7 or 8 teams in the Highland Park area. And then we merged with HP Scott's because our goal was like, hey, we're coaching your kids for high school. Like, we need Stuart Brown at the time to kind of be a part of it. And that was our ultimate goal, to develop them and get them ready for high school. And then we did that for probably 3 or 4 years. And then Matt Montaigne got the UNT goalie job in 2011, was real successful. And he invited me out there to coach a camp the following summer. And Coach Hedlund and I hit it off pretty well, and he offered me a volunteer job in 2012. That year, UNT won 2 championships, and then the following year, he offered me a part-time role, and then 2014, a full-time role. And every year, I was a full-time assistant there. We won either 1 conference championship or 2 conference championships, so we made a nice little run there for the time we were there.
That's really impressive. So now, coming from someone that has hearing kids that want to get into coaching, how important is it for them to go volunteer coach at a college? Is that like the football side is that they're working on some degree at the school and they're going to go be an assistant coach and they volunteer? Is it the same thing for the world of soccer, or is it you go volunteer and you go work your day job because you need the income?
You definitely need the income. I was lucky enough that I was coaching clubs, so that paid the bills. And it was my only day off. I'd go to UNT on Tuesdays. I'd make the 45-minute drive because I was living in Plano at the time. And, I mean, I would say it's priceless. I think any career you do, if you're passionate about it, you have to go volunteer for at least a year to get your foot in the door. Go prove what you can do. And then that's how you get your foot in the door. Hey, I'll work for free, get your foot in the door. And then you move your way up. It's anything in life. It's not just soccer. I think any career, if you're passionate about something, you want to get your foot in the door, go tell any boss, any manager, I'll work for free. I just want to show you, prove to you what I can do. But to me, it was life changing. I mean, it was a struggle. At first, it was like that 45-minute drive from Plano to Denton was, it got long. It's like, man, I'm doing this for free. I hope it pays off. But it definitely paid off, and God definitely took care of me for sure.
That's awesome. That's the thing. Like, you hear all these kids that go through and play soccer, and all of a sudden they get to 18, and all of a sudden, like, I don't want to play soccer anymore. I want to go coach. And so they go get a degree in coach management, and they're confused on where to start. And I feel like there's no true direction on giving kids that, because they'll go play soccer at a high level, and they'll go play on, I don't know what level, like, go play on the highest level here in DFW, then realize, like, hey, I love playing, but I love teaching more. And I don't want to be a teacher. I want to teach soccer. And they go into coaching. And a lot of kids will ask, like, where do you go? How do you go learn to coach in soccer? So it's kind of fascinating that you said you volunteered for a year and it ended up in a great path for you.
Yeah. I was lucky I was able to coach the CEO of the marketing arm, this guy named Ray Clark. I was able to coach his kids growing up. And I had a meeting with him trying to figure out what I wanted to do with life. And I was like, I'm just struggling. I'm trying to figure out the next move. And we went to lunch one day, and he's like, look, he has so many employees. He does a really good job, very successful. But he told me there's three things people look for in work. It's like, one, you make a lot of money. Two, you really love what you do. And three, there's a chance for you to move up. He's like, some people only circle one of those boxes, whether it's they make a lot of money, but they can't move up, they hate their job. He's like, if you're really lucky, if you can circle two of those boxes where you can work your way up or really love what you're doing or whatever those two are, he's like, the ones that can circle all three boxes are got it made. So that's what I've really tried to do. And another thing I've learned is don't do things for the money. We're all brainwashed to think that you need all the fancy, nice things or whatever. But if you do things for money, then it just doesn't work. If you do things out of the goodness of your heart and the right way, the money will take care of itself in more ways than you can even dream of.
I like that. Thank you. So you ended up at UNT. Did you continue coaching on this? You said you continued coaching on the side at your the academy level, or did you strictly move to UNT full-time coaching?
I was UNT full-time coaching, but in the soccer world, one of the perks is you can coach.
So you're saying one of the perks of coaching at a college level is you're still able to coach at the academy?
Yeah, academy level or club soccer select level. So I was able to coach two select teams while I was coaching at the university. So with our schedule, we'd practice like 2 to 4 with the college. So we had the evenings pretty open to recruit and do other things. So twice a week, I would do my club team practices, and I'd be able to supplement the income.
That's great that you're able to do that. Now, do the kids that you coached, I don't know if you coached boys or girls, did they see what you're doing as the assistant as a positive for them to give them hope for collegiate, or was it just they love playing soccer and that's all they cared about?
I think most of them saw the benefit of having a Division I coach them, especially if you're shelling all that money and you're paying select soccer, your goal is to go to the next level for the most part. Some it's not, but a lot of these kids, I mean, they definitely value that experience. And it was cool because I would take whatever we did at UNT and I'd run similar practices at the club level and be like, hey, this is what college kids are doing right now. So might as well start working on it now and getting used to it for that development. And just so you're ready for that next step, whether it's Division 1, 2, 3, or even for your high school team.
That's awesome. Was there anything great or great experiences you had while UNT? I mean, the championships are great. Conference championships are great. Is there any special moments that you had or experiences that you had that changed your perspective on the sport or how you handle the sport differently today than you would have if you didn't have that time coaching there?
I mean, just it's priceless what I learned at UNT in my time there. I mean, Coach Hedlund, he's been there 27, 28 years now. He's never had a losing season, so just having a mentor like that kind of showed me the way and how the college game works, how recruiting works. Learned so much from him. And I would say my time there at UNT, what I really learned and what I really value now is the mental toughness training. A lot of people don't focus as much on mental toughness, being strong. I had to fight through that as a player with that fitness test. So it was just a mental struggle, and you really don't spend much time developing the mental side. We were fortunate enough to have this guy named Brett Ledbetter. If you haven't heard of him, please go watch his YouTube videos. But he is, I mean, he's changed my world as not even just a coach, but as a person. And the stuff I've had an opportunity to learn from him, I mean, we would share his videos and work on the things he worked with our soccer team. And then our athletic director at the time, Ren Baker, he was at Missouri, and they brought Brett Ledbetter on to do their stuff, like mental toughness stuff at Missouri. And at first, he's like, wait a minute, we spend a lot of good money on sports psych people, and why do we need this guy to come? They're like, look, just let him come one time and you'll see. And then that one time was all it took. They brought him on. And then long story short, Ren Baker was able to bring Brett Ledbetter to our coaches meeting and actually do some sessions with all the coaching staff at UNT. And our first live meeting with him, he'd say, hey, who's seen my videos? Who's heard of me? And I was the only one with our hand up at the time. And it was just cool, unique experience for me. Like, no, this stuff works. Like, we use it with our teams. We were the only program at UNT winning championships at the time. But it was just cool, like, knowing that mental aspect of the game that we don't really spend as much time developing, that we actually took time to develop with our athletes. It to me, it was one of the secrets of our success, because you can do all the on-field stuff, but it's about building relationships with the players and really building that mental toughness that I think really sets the special teams apart. And now, okay. I mean, after he's been there with UNT, now our basketball team there is winning. You got the golf, you got all these other sports, softball. I mean, there's a lot of championship level teams at UNT now. It's not just soccer.
With the mental toughness side. So would you say that was a driving force for the college success on top of the other coaching staff that was there then? I mean, you're talking about all the other sides of the sports wise. How does it apply, do you think, when you were there? Was it a plus one type thing for you guys?
I would say, like, without a doubt, recruiting is number one. You got to be able to recruit. You got to get the athletes there, and you got to do a good job recruiting. That's just building time, building relationships, going out there to the practices, the games. I mean, it's long hours. Sometimes it's tedious. It's not the most fun being away from your family, but recruiting is number one. And then I would say definitely the mental toughness, the team bonding. I mean, a lot of teams don't spend as much time on that. So I would think that was a huge key to success. And some of his videos, I mean, he has tons. He works with tons of coaches around the nation, tons of players. And it's just getting them to discuss things that aren't normally discussed. And when you do that with a team, you build those relationships with each other where you'll have each other's back more, and you get to know your teammates better, and you'll want to fight for them more. So it's just, I think recruiting and the mental toughness part are priceless to me.
So now, leaving UNT, you're with DKSC. I have nothing but positive things to say, because I've seen what Juan has done for the club since he's been between the Defeaters and the Kicks merging, and what he has done with them and grown them. Now, do you think you've taken what you've learned from Brett Ledbetter and apply it to where you're at now with coaching with DKSC, or
oh, 100%.
Do you think that's part of their success then, is how much the coaches are into always looking for the edge?
Yeah, well, it's Juan Martinez is amazing. I have nothing but good things to say about him. I was able to recruit some of his 01 Kicks players at UNT and built that relationship with him, but he's just an amazing guy, and I would definitely say it's a player's first club. There's no egos. It's all about the players, all about getting them to the next level, whatever that next level may be. Another cool, unique story is Juan Martinez is all about mental toughness, and he met Brett Ledbetter through Becky, the old University of Florida head coach. So he has a better relationship with him. I mean, he even brought him on to DKSC to do some in-person stuff as well. So I was lucky enough to have met Brett Ledbetter at UNT with some meetings, and then also at DKSC with some online meetings and also live meetings. So it's just funny how God works and how he just throws things together and puts stuff together.
Amazing how things work out. Yes,
it really is. But no, Juan is just an amazing human being, and just, I mean, what he's done with the club in such a short amount of time is just fun to watch and fun to be a small piece of.
Hello, and thank you for listening to this week's episode. While interviewing Daniel, I got to listen to his take on his time at college and playing in the pros and learning between his sophomore and junior year about the effort he has to put in. Really touched home with me personally as a parent, then more so as someone that's passionate about U.S. soccer. As he stated, that you actually have to put a lot of work in to be successful and have passion and drive for the game. Us as parents, we need to make sure that we help our players realize this goal is attainable. And everything else he talked about in this episode about his career and getting to where he was at, I found it to be amazing that he did not come from a large club and he still went to a D1 school. Remember that anything's possible as long as our players' heads are on straight and striving to be the best them they can be. Stay tuned for next week and keep chatting by the pitch.